to the University of Warwick RDO podcast. Today we'll be talking to Luana about completing a PhD in a second language. Welcome, Luana, to our podcast. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Thank you. It's really good to be here. So I'm Luana Garcia. Tavano Garcia, let's do the full name here. I work as a research development facilitator at Warwick University. I finished my PhD a few years ago in the same institution, and now I deliver workshops at the research development department of the doctoral college at Warwick, and my research was on performances of national identity. I am Brazilian, and I came all the way to the UK to study Brazil. So I studied different kinds of performances of national identity and how the social, political, and economic environment influences such performances in contemporary Brazil.
So you came all the way to the University of Warwick to study Brazil in a second language. So tell me about your first language.
Well, my first language is Portuguese. And I came all the way from Brazil to study Brazil in the UK.
Fantastic. In English, in a second language.
In a second language, in English.
Perhaps you could give us a bit of background into how you became interested in supporting researchers completing a PhD in a second language.
Yes. I find it difficult to explain to those who haven't done a PhD in a second language what it is like, but I suppose this is part of the job, and this is how we all learn with what we're doing and with each other, to try to explain and go through the processes of what it means to do a PhD in a second language.
Today, then, we're going to be talking about completing a PhD in a second language, but perhaps you could show your experiences, expectations versus reality, perhaps.
Yeah, that's a great way to start it, actually, because there is a difference between what you're expecting once you get that acceptance letter. Everything is amazing. You're moving to another country. You're going to be part of a community of researchers. You're going to improve your English skills. It's an incredible opportunity for professional development within academia. Everything seems very rosy and exciting. And the reality of it is quite different in terms of you have to learn to adapt to a different environment, to a different culture. And I mean that within academia, the culture of academia, and also the culture of the place that you are moving to, that you are living. And in my case, it was the UK, and the students that I work with are in the UK as well. Second, you realize that your language skills are not so good as you thought they were. Because we all have to do, English tests to come to be able to undertake your PhD in English. And, you pass the test and you think you are in a certain level, but it's only when you are surrounded in an English-speaking environment, let's say, all around you, that you realize that your language skills are not as good as you thought they were, and that starts to develop a little bit of insecurities just then and there, even before your first day at the university. And sometimes I think that in reality you struggle to fit in, or that feeling of fitting in, and to find your community. So that takes time. So that, that feeling of how can I blend in this world starts to arise, and then in the reality of it, you find out that actually everything that you did in your native language actually takes double, three times, maybe four times the time to do in a second language. So all those things are kind of like a reality shock once you encounter them, once you get to the PhD process.
So what would you say was the biggest surprise that you had coming to the UK newly excited PhD researcher, all ready and ready to go? What was your biggest kind of surprise, or perhaps shock when you arrived?
First, I was very enthusiastic about everything. Everything was new, and I try to get sparks in my eyes when I'm learning things. But I think that I started to get a little bit frustrating when I didn't get particularly colloquialism and colloquial like jokes, or you know, just regular conversations with groups of people. And I get this from a lot of students as well. It was that feeling of being in a group setting that you can't really follow the joke, and then you just laugh or nod along as if you're understanding everything, but deep down you're like, I just don't get it. So it's very, I can't really name, I think, a particular one, but I think that British humor got me. It took me a while to get it. I got it now.
Absolutely. So you talked about some of the perhaps expectations versus the reality of what it's like. Perhaps you could tell us maybe some of the main challenges.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I usually say that it's not that different from a native speaker. The challenges of doing a PhD in a second language are not that different from a native speaker doing a PhD. So all the, let's say, you know, a common example of things that PhDs battle with is, you know, overcoming the imposter syndrome, for example, or, you know, the feelings of insecurities and all those lack of confidence of having to write a proper academic thesis, all those things. They're there for native speakers too. It's just enhanced when you're a second language speaker. And it feels extra heavy because there's a lot of feelings of inadequacy that pop up. So you don't feel like you're the right person to do the task. And there's a fear as well of being misunderstood or misunderstanding and the implications that might, you know, might bring upon you. So, you know, it takes a completely different time to do the writing, the reading. You know, it took me twice the time to read in English at the beginning. It gets better, but particularly at the beginning, it took me a long time to read what I would, for example, in Portuguese. So just having to deal with the patience and not letting frustration in, I suppose, to go through the timing that it just takes. So it is very similar, but it's just more enhanced and a little bit, it feels heavier if you're in a second language.
What kinds of things did you do to help yourself, or coping strategies did you start using to help yourself through these challenges?
I think that it began for me when I actually got overwhelmed and things like that with everything, PhD plus second language, and not finding the right vocabulary for things that I wanted to say, all those things, and you feel overwhelmed. What I did is just going back to basics and going back to that reason why. The reason why is that it kind of guides the way out of that process, I feel, or the process of being overwhelmed. So why, firstly, did I choose to do a PhD? Because no one forced me. Why did I choose to do it? And second, why did I choose to do it in the UK? Again, this was my choice. Fortunately, I chose to do it. So once I go back to the reason why, I go back to my values or what I value. So what is it that I value about doing a PhD in English? What doors can that open for me? What kind of experiences will I, you know, go through just by interacting in English, teaching in English, writing in English, just, you know, learning in a different way, learning how to communicate in a different way. So all those things that I have to gain from doing a PhD in English, I focus on those. And then what do I value about myself doing a PhD in the UK? Let's say, what is it that I bring that is unique because of my personal background, my cultural linguistic background? You know, we all have a different history. So when I go back to what I value about myself and what I value about actually doing it in English, then things feel a bit easier. It felt a bit easier. And I think that to get around the challenges ultimately comes down to awareness, and that is internal, like self-awareness of, okay, I feel like I need to improve here. I need to grow on this area. And so I'll focus on that. And also external awareness, like, where can I get support? Where can I get the training that will help me go through this? And then go for it.
Or how would you help perhaps some of our listeners who perhaps didn't necessarily come with a clear why? They might have been, it was something that their parents were keen for them to do, or perhaps their government has sponsored them to come to the UK to do a PhD, or perhaps their employer has paid for that opportunity to come to the UK to do a PhD. How can you get that motivation, and how can you help yourself if you're hitting these challenges when you don't have such a clear personal driving why?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that I think the why even works there. If you go deep and deep and deep and back and back and back. But I suppose that then if you can try to focus on what is it that you can get out of this experience. You know, because it you're going to go through a lot of ups and downs in a PhD. It's a roller coaster ride, I'm not going to lie. But you're going to come out a different person, and you're going to accumulate a lot of experience and knowledge that you would not have perhaps the opportunity of going through if you had not accepted to come, or, you know, chosen to come, or just happened to be here.
My supervisor constantly talked about this being a training in research, and this idea that it's an immersive training opportunity, and it is and for me, as a native speaker and living in the UK anyway, it felt like an immersive training experience for academia. But I guess for someone who's completing in a second language, it is a completely life immersing training opportunity.
Absolutely.
So to think about the bigger, wider picture why. So even if your driver has come from an employer or government sponsor, to know what you could get from this is likely to help you. So what else do you think could help our listeners to think about some of the challenges that they might be facing in this immersive training experience that they've embarked upon?
I think that we tend to think that we're alone in the PhD because it can feel like a very, very solitary place to be when you're alone with your thesis and you have to come up with the answers and things like that. But I would say just reaching out to people and finding that community wherever you are. If the university offers that support, get it. It's there for you. If not, then look around the local communities. Where can you interact with people? Because, we're not alone in this world, thankfully. And being in another environment that isn't your, let's say, your native land, can feel even extra solitary. So I would suggest that one of the main things is try to find connection, however and in whatever capacity that you can. That definitely eases the burden.
And where did you find those connections?
Oh, I joined a tango society. I came all the way from Brazil to learn Argentine tango in the UK. that was the main thing that I did outside of my PhD and I made amazing friends, and it was nothing related to, obviously, dancing tango. It was nothing related to what I was doing, but it gave me that that first pleasure because I was doing something and dancing. But also I found a community there with people that actually helped. But also, to be fair, that was outside academic environment, but also I relied on colleagues in my department, in theatre and performance department at Warwick. Had amazing colleagues that were there, and we exchanged a lot of, frustrations and a lot of joy and a lot of things in common, a lot of things not so in common, but very respectfully, practicing that exchange of knowledge. And that really helped a lot as well.
So looking for sort of opportunities to become connected with people outside of your university life, the PhD life, helped, I guess, with this idea that the PhD can become all encompassing. So having something to look forward to outside of the PhD can be quite a nice thing to have. In terms of maybe the idea of writing and reading in a second language, what were some hints and tips of things that you found particularly useful?
Wow, that is, for me, particularly, well, with reading, I just had to accept that I would have to take my time with it. So first is acceptance. It is what it is, you know. You can't rush the process in the sense, and you have to make sure that you get what you need to get from it, from the paper you're reading or whatever. But always just after reading, taking notes first thing, always just creating a little document there or whatever software you use to take notes. First thing that really helped me was to put down my thoughts on it. And when it comes to writing, it's a hard one because even in the workshops, some people come with, well, I have to write in my native language. Do I write in my native language and then I translate, or do I write in English and then, you know, and go from there? And the way I did it actually changed throughout the PhD. So I started, whenever I would have an idea or a feeling or something that would prompt me to write, I would do it in Portuguese because that's how it came. It came with a certain fluency, and I would just write and then find a way to translate what that was in English. But that is very time consuming. But at the beginning, at least, I think that it's best that you just let it out so you don't create even more blockages about writing. Because writing is writing in general. It doesn't matter if it's in your native language or, you know, or in the second language. You can face a wall sometimes with writing. So if you can get it out on paper, the way it comes, the better. But then it started to change. I started to get into the dynamics of writing in English, and practice helps with that. And then I was just writing in English and then editing.
Fantastic. So at the beginning, recognizing that the importance is just to get writing. It doesn't matter how you're writing. It could be Portuguese. It can be English. It can be in pictorial. As long as you're getting at what's in your head, out of your head, and onto paper. But then as time goes on, I guess as perhaps that immersive training opportunity, that immersive opportunity to learn how to be a researcher becomes kind of your everyday life, English becomes your kind of everyday language, and writing in English becomes easier for you.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a particular moment where you thought, oh, I haven't written in Portuguese for a long time? Was there anything that you could pinpoint the first time where you realized that it came out in English before Portuguese?
I think it was around when I had to submit for my upgrade, and I had a deadline. I had a deadline coming up, and I don't know how to explain it, but it shifted something in me. And I just thought, okay, I just don't have the time to give myself, you know, I just have to do this. And something shifted, and I started to using a lot of synonyms and a lot of trying to work my way through the vocabulary and finding the right words through it. It started out of necessity to come out in English.
Mm-hmm. There's a lovely framework that we use, conscious competence and unconscious incompetence through to unconscious competence, where we get to the point where we're unconsciously competent at something without really knowing it anymore. And I guess you moved from consciously competent, I know how to do this, but I've got to really think about it, to, oh, it's just happened. So conscious, unconscious competence. So it sounds as if maybe the upgrade was that little push that you needed just to realize how much you already knew. You did know this stuff. You didn't need the manual necessarily, but there's something about holding on to that the instruction book because it's comfortable, but once someone takes it away, you realize that you were fine without it. And maybe the upgrade was what you needed. So it's fantastic that was the upgrade. Is always a pinch point for so many researchers. This is the first time I'm going to have to submit something for my supervisor or the examiners to read. But often it's a reassuring process. We know what you're doing. We've just given you that little bit of a push to go without the stabilizers, without the armbands. We know you can do this. So that's great that you had that opportunity to go for it and to try. And it was a success.
Absolutely. I think that sometimes we can hide behind a wall of insecurity and thinking, no, here it's safe. I'm in my comfort zone. I'm just, taking my time, thinking and writing in Portuguese, whatever, and translating and this and that. And, I saw in one of your workshops, you talking about the stretch zone just outside the comfort zone, doesn't get to the overwhelming zone, but yeah. So I think that for me, the upgrade was, and I think that for many of us, the upgrade is that push that gets you out of that comfort zone of the first year. Well, I say comfort zone, it is quite challenging your first year of PhD, but it just gives you that extra push. And it is a really good learning experience, the upgrade. It's there to help you, you just have to look at it that way.
So Luana, we talked today a lot about the benefits of doing the PhD in the second language and recognizing that it's a challenge, but it's an all-encompassing training experience for not just the PhD, but the wider kind of experience of lots of different things. What do you think has been the benefit to you in doing a PhD in a second language, if you were to perhaps think back and think what you might have not had the opportunity to experience if you were to have done your PhD in Portuguese in Brazil?
I think that it is the growing, the growth that comes from learning different ways of learning, because academic knowledge, let's say, it's also very cultural, believe it or not. So, and I think that learning other ways of knowing for me was one of the key and highlights of things, because when you grow up in a context, you kind of know your way through things. But when you're forced to come out, like not forced, but when you remove yourself from that context, that is that you're already familiar with the ways of learning, ways of teaching, ways of writing, ways of thinking, really. So for me, it was a lot of growth just in learning how to learn differently, how to observe people, and how they exchange knowledge in different ways, and how the production of knowledge happens in different ways. That for me was incredible. And I think that being able to balance those things, when I managed to balance those things between what I value about doing a PhD in English, which actually open doors for a lot of connection to people that I wouldn't have if I had done it in Brazil, right? This is a very multicultural place. It's a very international community, this of academic research. And if I had not been here, I wouldn't have that experience, really, of growing up, different ways of interacting with people and exchanging. And once I found that balance between what I value about doing it in English and what I value about myself doing it in English, then it's just, yeah, it just feels, you feel whole, and you feel like it's so worth it. I still live here in the UK, but if I were to go back to Brazil, I would carry all this with me. And just, this is why I feel like it's such a transformative journey.
Brilliant. So recognizing that there are so many benefits to completing that PhD in the second
absolutely language. And there's a feeling also of absolute personal and professional accomplishment, like I did this, tick. Well done, me. Wow.
Absolutely. So perhaps we could finish then on that feeling that you got when you when you received the examiner's results at the end of your viva and the graduation. What was your overriding feeling there of when they said congratulations, Luana? Or did they say Dr. Luana? I don't know. What did they say to you?
Yeah, you receive kind of once you've passed and everything, you receive an email saying, dear Dr. Luana. And that was, for me, that was like, oh my goodness, I have this title now. A gender neutral title. And I can't, yeah, it was just an overall feeling of excitement and, yeah, just pure happiness. Just, yeah, you get to the end of the journey and you look back and it's almost like, yeah, you do recognize the down bits of it, but once you're past it, you realize how much you learn from all of it. The process is not a steady one, but in the process is the learning, and that's worth it all.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experiences of completing a PhD in a second language and how you've been supporting others as well completing their PhD in a second language. And hopefully we'll get you back on at a later date to talk about other things, the experiences that you've had as a researcher completing PhDs in a second language, and also your role in the researcher development program online for the University of Warwick. Thanks very much, Luana.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure having this chat.
No problem. Take care now.
Take care.